This podcast is brought to you by Labyrinth Marketing.
Hello and welcome to the Whole Marketeer podcast. Today's topic is an area of personal development. It's empowerment and the underlying principle of the Whole Marketeer. We are here to support and empower the marketeers behind the brands and business. I'm excited to welcome Mark onto the podcast shortly, but before I do, let me just tell you why empowerment is so important. Empowerment for me is having confidence and belief. And for empowerment for marketeers is empowering those in your care or yourself to be able to take the reins for your daily work as a marketeer, for your career and your life as a whole. It is a topic that is really close to my heart, and I encourage all marketeers to feel empowered and stand in their daily power. Today's guest is Mark Evans. Mark is an exec level marketeer and non-exec director with several side hustles. At Direct Line Group, he's a managing director for marketing and digital with responsibility for brand, communications, CRM, insight, digital and data across the brand portfolio. He is also the exec sponsor of the BAME element of the Direct Line Group D&I activity and sits on the board of the DLG Legal Services. Prior to Direct Line Group, Mark worked at HSBC, 118118 and Mars in a range of marketing and commercial roles. Mark also serves as a non-executive director of LearnEttle, an ed tech business, chairman of the School of Marketing, chairman of the Advertising Association Frontfoot, and co-host of the Oh, the Places We'll Go web show. He's also founded the Sprintathon in 2016, which seeks to beat cancer faster, hashtag beat cancer faster, and has raised over £500,000 to date for Stand Up to Cancer. Mark is a fellow of the Marketing Society and the Marketing Academy and has been recognised externally as the Financial Services Forum Marketer of the Year in 2015, the Marketing Society Leader of the Year in 2018, and within Campaign's Power 100 Hall of Fame. So Mark, welcome to the Whole Marketeer podcast.
Thanks, Abby. Great to be here.
So we always start with a big juicy question up front. And today's question is one that's close to my heart, which is, what is empowerment for you?
Well, it is a big topic because, you know, empowerment allows people to be the best version of themselves. Unashamedly, most of my references for my thinking come from rugby. It was a sport that served me well and I think informed everything I've learned about leadership. And very specifically, rugby is probably relatively humble compared to some sports. It was always the sport that bricklayers and brain surgeons could play together. And very specifically, captains don't make that many decisions. The captain, potentially a bit more of a figurehead, but certainly the person that helps to bring out the best in everybody, creates the right culture for success. And in New Zealand rugby, which is probably the pinnacle, it's the captain that sweeps the floor of the changing rooms after training or a match. And so I think that's helped me to understand what I think empowerment is, which is you don't need to make that many decisions, maybe some really big ones, but not that many. People on the pitch don't say, you know, they don't ask, should I pass here or kick there? They just get on with it and do the best they can in the moment, in the flow. And also the captain occasionally has to put their head where it hurts on behalf of the team. So empowerment is simply that to me, which is enabling people to be the best version of themselves by giving them space to make their own decisions and own mistakes, catching them when they fall. And it boils down to a set of words that I heard earlier in my career, which helped me a lot. And it roughly went like this. Somebody said to me, I expect a lot from you, but I believe in you. And ultimately, I've got your back. And I found those words very liberating, very empowering, very motivating. And so I have, again, unashamedly stolen them with pride and use them quite a lot when I start working with somebody new or somebody new comes into the team. Because I think that captures the spirit and also the practicality of how I want to lead people so that they can flourish. And just the last thing I'd say is, I suppose we've moved to agile Spotify, if you like, methodology. Mm. And that captures it in a more formal way in terms of this notion of servant leadership. And the role of the leader is to serve. Now, that doesn't mean you can wash your hands and be absent. And you need to know enough to know when to get in the way and when to get out of the way. But ultimately, the role of the leader is to help to create flow for the teams who are doing the real work. So there's a few different twists on it, but I think it's all about recognizing your role versus the people who really do the work and who really need to be the best version of themselves.
Makes complete sense. I think the best version of yourself is a really strong message, because everyone has got that greatness within them. It's about ensuring that they have the tools and, as you say, the support, and knowing that when they do make decisions, especially as you were mentioning, they're in agile working environments where, you know, data is king and you are empowered to make those decisions yourself based on what you have discovered and which decision you think is best to go in, knowing that someone has your back, that no matter which decision you make, I've got you. I think it's a really strong message that I think all leaders should be providing to their team, and also marketers to each other.
Yeah, very true.
So with the want to empower our marketeers, and, you know, as I mentioned previously, it's really close to my heart, because everything that I look to do with the whole marketeer is all about empowerment, you know, giving the tools, technical skills, the soft skills, the leadership skills, so that they can go and be the best version of themselves. But also the support, as you say, I've got your back, to be, you know, successful yet fulfilled marketeers. What do you think it takes for the marketeers that are looking after those in their care to truly empower them? What are those skills and behaviours do you think they need to possess to be able to empower somebody else?
I think empowerment comes from somewhat low ego, or at least a self-assured space. If you're sweating about your own performance or thinking and feelings, then you're not very well placed to think on behalf of others. I mean, I make it sound sort of easy, and I've been a bit pure about it, but, you know, it's egocentrism gets in the way of empowerment, if you like. And so I think there's a lot about knowing yourself, knowing what you're really good at, and taking confidence from that. And therefore, it's unfortunate that many people beat themselves up over things that they're already good, aren't really tuned in enough and acknowledge their own spikes. We're sort of bleeding into the area of imposter syndrome, but leaders who are constantly doubting themselves is a problem, because that doesn't give that sort of self-assuredness to start to care more to others. Now, I say that glibly, but you, me and others, apart from sociopaths and narcissists, everyone suffers from imposter syndrome. So it's not like it's a magic wand and goes away. I think that's the inner work, to register what you're good at, therefore be kind to yourself. And that allows you to be kind to others. I love the, I think it was actually from ancient times, the notion, be kind, everyone you meet is fighting a great battle. And of course, that starts with yourself. So in a way, treat yourself as others would want to be treated, flipping around that notion, of course. So yeah, I think it comes from that sort of inner confidence that you can then think more cleanly and purely about what others need to succeed.
I 100% agree. I think it starts with personal understanding. It starts, as you say, with knowing yourself, knowing your strengths, knowing what you value, knowing where you are going and your goals and your fulfillment, and knowing that we don't have to be great at everything. That's the power of strengths. It's the power of, you know, we are a library, aren't we, of people, and together we make greatness. And I think once, as you say, once you've got that level of self-awareness and knowing who you are and what you bring to the table, that almost, it doesn't negate imposter syndrome, but it does help, because you know that, you know, we're not all good at everything. Here's what I am good at, here's what I value, and here's what I'm going. And so therefore you're not starting that comparisonitis, as I call it, trail. And because when you feel assured, you then can feel insured to help others. And yes, so I can agree more. Personal understanding is obviously a big part of the whole marketeer. And I think it's for that reason, because once you know yourself, you can only help others to the extent in which you know yourself, is a saying that I often use. And I think it's a key to empowerment. You cannot empower others until you feel as strong as possible in yourself. And of course, we all have imposter syndrome or comparisonitis at different stages in our career and different stages in our working week, but it's still being able to revert back to what you know about yourself, I think, which is key.
And this is the funny thing, actually, well, funny thing, curious thing, I'm not sure, but this is where marketers should have an advantage, because if what we're saying is self-knowledge is the breakthrough, that's fueled, I suppose, by the fact that most marketers are very curious.
Yes.
And it's a key skill of marketers to be curious. Curiosity really sort of drives everything, doesn't it? And so applying that curiosity to oneself, maybe easier said than done, but maybe we have got a bit of a head start. And I do get a sense that marketing often in the organization provides a bit of vibe, a bit of mojo, a bit of pizzazz, you know, a bit of energy. And hopefully sort of on average, marketers are maybe slightly more empowering. Yeah, not one rule for all, but I think at the margin probably are. And maybe that does come from that inner curiosity.
I think you're right. And curiosity, you know, is a key skill, and constantly asking questions, and not just about your consumers, but also about yourself. And funnily enough, I was out for lunch yesterday with a colleague, an ex-colleague, and he was saying, I can see the overlap, because, you know, the thing that binds coaching or personal understanding with marketing is that deep-rooted emotional psychological understanding. Because if we want to build deep-rooted emotional connection with our consumers, there's almost an air, I guess, as well, of being able to do that with ourselves. Because if we don't understand what truly makes us tick and what drives us on that deep-rooted emotional, as I call it, soul level, how would we ever be able to empathise or connect with consumers on that level either?
100%.
So how do you personally look to empower the marketeers in your care? I mean, obviously those motivational words, and the one that keeps resonating with me is, I've got you. What other things do you put in place to ensure that they feel empowered, or that you feel personally empowered every day so that you can look after them?
I think there's some soft things and some hard things. The soft things is pretty evident whether you do care or not. You can't really hide it. So just being your authentic self, making time for people, being respectful, being courteous, you know, like being a good citizen, a good human being helps a lot. Because then I think people sort of, you know, themselves then care, will give that extra discretionary effort without necessarily being asked to, you know, tapping into intrinsic things rather than extrinsic things. But also that's great. I think that's part of it. The other part probably is the more formal side, which is, and this is the bit where, you know, I always worry a tiny bit about, you creep into a parent-child world, but you do have to set expectations. And I think as human beings, we need frameworks, we need goals, we need structure. And so being clear on what expectations are. And I think without setting expectations, things are likely to drift in any direction. You just don't know which. And so that's the conversation I'm not going to say struggle with, but find a little bit awkward. But sometimes, you know, you are the boss. You are there to help people to do the right work on the right things. And so clearly setting expectations is part of that. I think in both regards, the soft and the hard things, it's clear that longevity helps. And it probably links back to that self-assured thing. I mean, it is a problem that the CMO average tenure is so short, the lowest in the C-suite. The CMO is the least trusted member of the C-suite through the eyes of a CEO. You know, that's a problem because those things I've talked about come more and more with time. And I can see that now, having never really done a job for more than 2 or 3 years through all my career until this role, and now doing this role for 9 years, and I never would have imagined that. I can see the benefits of longevity, but that's just an observation. That's not a solution, because there's other issues at play which are driving down CMO tenure. But for sure, longevity does help.
And when you talk about longevity, is that time in role or looking to the future about where you're going, or a combination of the two?
Probably they go hand in hand, but I do mean quite practically in terms of time in role. There's an interesting thing, which is, you know, if marketing is sort of sometimes a bit on the back foot, less so in consumer goods companies like Mars, where I grew up, but in financial services and insurance, you know, and generally in organizations where marketers don't really own the P&L, it can be being on the back foot. And therefore, the first 18 months for any CMO is a bit survivalist in terms of you've got to show some early wins, get some points on the board, for another sports metaphor. And that means you don't necessarily get to the good stuff. And by the good stuff, I mean the long-term strategic brand development, or indeed the feeling settled as a leader where you can truly demonstrate your character and your personality. So it's probably actually quite a nuts and bolts practical thing that you need time.
It's a really good point, especially if you're trying to win the trust of the board, that actually, you know, we as marketeers, or me personally, if no one else, really wants marketing to be the function, the part of the business that is leading that long-term commercial agenda. And in order to do that, we need to prove that we have strong commercial acumen. And I think that's one of the massive skill changes over the last 2 decades, is that, you know, we should be owning the P&L. We should be able to influence every single line in that P&L by having cross-functional working and visibility from other functions that all feed into that P&L and the way in which we bring those products or services to market. And I think, as you say, as you're talking about a business that maybe isn't consumer first, or maybe isn't already marketing orientated because they're not in that FMCG brand-led world, that, yeah, longevity would be helpful, because you're going to be able to build that trust, aren't you, over time, by showing I can contribute to the numbers, I understand the numbers, give me a little bit more of the P&L, give me all the P&L, so that we can take that role.
Yeah, the only caveat is that I think it probably is appropriate that, you know, I don't own an insurance P&L because it's ferociously technical and it's a lot about reserving and pricing and actuarial components. And so I happily accept that, but it does mean that my role is to make sure, not, well, mine and many people's role is to make sure that the counterbalance to that is to seek to be ever more customer oriented and almost sort of as a counterbalance to the way that therefore many businesses are structured along product lines, that we have strong brand, customer and marketing representation. So even more focus on evangelism, advocacy, stakeholder management, networking, just to make sure that there's the right landing strip for marketing in the organization.
Yes, and that those two things are interlinked, you know, satisfying the wants and needs of consumers profitably. It's that combination, isn't it? You know, the classic CIM definition of marketing holds true then and it still does now.
Yeah.
So talking about your career, and as you mentioned, growing up in Mars and now in the insurance world, what would you say have been your career highs and lows?
So the choreographed version is, well, I joined Mars on the graduate fast track, had 9 great years. Then I went to 118 and joined the exec there and had 4 amazing years. And then took a different path and joined financial services and worked at HSBC for a couple of years and then joined Direct Line 9 years ago in the build-up to an IPO. And it's been an amazing transformation and turnaround. I mean, that's the beautifully choreographed bit. The reality is it's been a sequence of happy accidents, including a major pivot point for redundancies. And I'm very happy to talk about this openly because there is still a bit of taboo around redundancy. And the reality is, particularly through the pandemic, that will be many people's reality. So here's the real story. I did economics at university and the careers advice I got was that half of you will be bankers and half of you will be accountants, which I look back and sort of wince and laugh at all at the same time. And I was pretty sure I didn't want to be an accountant. So I applied through the milk round for jobs in banking. And I landed a job in investment banking in a bank called Hill Samuel, which was a subsidiary of the TSB. But I asked for permission to defer that for a year to do a sabbatical role at university. So in the students' union, sports president, athletic union president, loved it, best year of my life. But unfortunately, or maybe not unfortunately, but anyway, what happened during that year was that Lloyds and TSB came together in a big merger and my graduate job disappeared in a puff of smoke. And that was a bit of a kick at the time, I have to say, because I'd not even started. In fact, I'd not even set foot in the building because it was a milk round process. And this was this rather surreal thing that I'd been made redundant before I'd even started work. But I have to say, I was already having doubts in that the people I was speaking to who are now maybe 1 or 2 or 3 years in to their careers, who were in banking, were working tremendously hard and not really enjoying it. And at the same time, I just had this itch that I was hearing other people who had gone into marketing saying, yeah, I'm loving it. I'm feeling quite empowered, going back to what we were talking about before. It's quite varied. It's exciting. I'm learning. And yeah, I'm working hard, but it's perfectly reasonable. So anyway, the short story there is, obviously, I had to do another year at university. So I used my modest payout from having never set foot in the building to do a master's and went back through the milk round process, but looked for general management and marketing and applied to Mars, P&G, Unilever, Nestle, Cadbury's, etc. And was very fortunate to get an offer with Mars. And I'm so grateful for those 9-odd years at Mars because I think it is still... Well, it certainly was then the classical toolbox of marketing that you learnt. Marketing really was an ascendant function and many, if not most, nearly all senior leaders had come up through the marketing function. And the consumer is our boss was sort of emblazoned on the inside of everybody's eyelids. But then after 9 years, there was a big restructure and I was asked to move to Germany, pretty remote part of Germany, where the Center for European Pet Food, which I was working in at the time, was going to be located. And actually, we just had my second son. Things hadn't gone perfectly. And that wasn't really for me. And so it was sort of elective, but ultimately, if I wasn't going to move, they didn't want me. And that hurt because after 9 years, you know, I'd given everything and here they were saying, well, actually, you know, you're not indispensable, which I now know is ultimately true of everybody. But at the time, it hurt a bit. So, but anyway, you know, I had plenty of time to get myself together and join 118 as a bit of a road less traveled. And it's often the case that after 8 or 9 years in consumer goods you make a break for something different. And I have no regrets in doing that. 118118 was quite weird and wonderful, very in sync with the advertising. And I did a number of roles there, some marketing, some commercial, some UK-based, some global-based, spent quite a bit of time in the US. And it was a huge learning curve. After 4 years, again, a restructure, my job disappeared. By this stage, I suppose I was a little bit more used to it all. But again, you know, it hurts a bit. But 4 years was probably, you know, a bit of a lifetime in normal years. 118118, things move pretty fast. So I had to go back out again looking for work, and this time landed at HSBC and only spent 2 years there because, again, there was a big restructure 2 years in, and that was my fourth redundancy. And I remember coming home to tell Lorna and the kids, and my daughter would have been 9 at the time, and she said, so Dad, that means they don't want you anymore. And I said, well, yeah, kind of. I mean, it's supposed to not be personal, but it certainly feels it. But the thing is, not that you get desensitized, but the gift of being made redundant is you do have a chance to reflect, understand what it is that motivates you, what you're good at, what you're not so good at, what you want to do, what's your value, what's your worth. And we learn most through adversity. It's a truism. So anyway, then I went to Direct Line, and you know, I have to say, I've landed jam side up at every turn, and I wouldn't change anything at all because it's probably forced me into a bit more change than otherwise I would have taken. And, you know, actually, paradoxically, of course, I am the most loyal person I know because I've never resigned. I've never even got a chance to resign. And so I've actually been gifted sort of a forced pivot moment a few times. And that's really helped me to get to where I am. And I now sit on an exec that's of a great company with a great boss and CEO. And as much as anything, it's been through luck as much as judgment. So maybe there's a lesson in there, which is that we should not plan our careers to within an inch of their lives, because sometimes serendipity can really be quite powerful.
Definitely. And I think listening to you tell that journey that you've been on in your marketing career, I think it's been those moments of pause, even if they weren't necessarily ones that you had asked for, that have allowed you to reflect and build your own personal understanding about, as you say, your strengths, what makes you you, what you value, so that you can make those decisions about what's the next role. So even though they haven't been necessarily of your choosing, they have been of your making, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does completely make sense. And I go one stage further in terms of these forced pivots.
Which I think is a great terminology, by the way, Mark, forced
pivots. Yeah, well, so it's guided me in my career choices, but I think it's also informed the person that I've become and helped me to realise and distill what I think my purpose is, which maybe we'll go on to talk a little bit about, and therefore some of the things that I've chosen to do outside of work, which I think have made me better in my job and also given me a great deal of reward. So, you know, we are all a product of our past. We're not a slave to our past, but we're definitely a product of our past. And actually, some of these big moments are the things that you can reflect back on and anchor the path that you've taken and the person you've become.
Yes, and looking at yourself holistically, some of the points that stood out for me, where were you talking about what you need for your life as a whole? So what you need for your family, what you need for you. And I think not enough people take those times to pause and think, yes, what do I want in my role and where do I want my career to go and what industries do I want to work in and which business might be aligned to my values and my strength and what I want, but also what's going to work for me personally and where I am in life and the life that I want to live holistically, you know, with my family, the work style, the pattern. And, you know, those forced pivots have also been of you saying, actually, this isn't going to work for me because it's not what I want for my life as a whole, including my family.
Yeah, I've certainly made mistakes and got things wrong along the way. And it has in the end ended up sounding quite rose-tinted, despite trying not to be. But
it's never a mistake. It's always a learning. And I think that, you know, that's the thing with growth mindset. And I think I read a quote the other day and it said, what you're going through today is allowing you to have the lessons to help someone else of tomorrow. And yeah. I think that's really true, especially for marketing leaders. And, you know, for me as a trainer, I will often point out mistakes that I have made or things that I used to do so that you can see the reality of we're all learning and evolving as we go. Yes, I might sit here now 22 years later from when I started my marketing career, and that's, you know, and everything that's gone into me training you in particular. But, you know, I made these mistakes. So here's the watch outs so that you don't. And it's that kind of being able to be open and honest about the journey we have been on and the lessons that we have learned so that we can help and empower others.
Yeah, and sort of makes me think, it's a bit of an adjacency, but, you know, being philosophical about challenge and failure, ultimately, this too shall pass. And, yes. And in many ways, it doesn't matter what's happened. It's all about what you do next when you do mess up. So, yeah, very philosophical, eh?
Indeed. And talking about your purpose, and, you know, one of the reasons I brought you on today, Mark, is because of what you give back to the marketing profession. I'd love to hear more about what your purpose is, actually, and what drives you to give so much back to the marketing community, of which I'm sure the listeners and everybody else is thankful for.
Yeah, so you have to allow me to indulge myself a little bit by telling a little story that I've told many times. So a lot of it starts back on the night of my graduation, where, as I said, I went to Nottingham University studying economics. There was five of us graduating. We went out for a celebratory meal in Nottingham city centre, certainly nothing posh, pretty low rent curry house. And it probably wouldn't have been a key memory from that day. Normally you would remember the process of the graduation ceremony, I suppose. But it did turn out to be very significant for one specific reason, which was that my best friend Matt's dad, Pete, decided he wanted to say a few words. And initially we were a little bit quizzical because it really wasn't that sort of posh place where, you know, chink a glass and say some profound words. But anyway, we shouldn't have worried because he was a very, very good speaker. And this is what he said. He said, "As I look before you, I'm jealous. And the reason I'm jealous is because from this position, you can achieve almost anything in the world. But at the same time, I pity you. And the reason I pity you is because for 20 years, you'll go in search of success. And after 20 years, when sadly, maybe your best years have passed, you'll realize that it's not about success. It's about significance. But the really smart people figure out how to achieve success and significance simultaneously." So, you know, we'd had a couple of beers, but it was a profound moment. And I think it affected all of us, haunted us in a positive way. And when we get together, it's a top of mind conversation and you can't help but remember every word, really. It was just one of those moments. Mm. And I think that balance between success and significance is, it's probably more wired into, if I look at my children and I look at people younger than me, I think over time, that notion has probably become a bit more implicit, but it wasn't back in the day. And as I said, I think it's helped me to think a bit differently about things. And so then if I roll that forward, I probably didn't listen to it enough in the first 10 years of my career. But in more recent times, that's led me to be able to articulate my purpose as helping people to achieve increased performance and increased fulfillment. So it's the and, always the and, always the hack, increased performance and increased fulfillment. And I got this from actually coaching back in the early 2010s, helped me to realize that typically it's seen as a trade-off between performance and fulfillment. So you have to basically sacrifice yourself to do well. That's a horrible thought. So actually, no, why can't you have both? And the answer is simple but hard. The answer is, well, you can have both. You just need to know what you're really good at and do more of it. Be really tuned into your strengths, your spikes, if you like, your positive spikes. And all too often, people are neglectful of those and obsess about their weaknesses. And it comes back a little bit to what we talked about, imposter syndrome, before. But if I could help myself and others to play to their strengths, quite a simple thought, really, play to your strengths, you can be more successful, you can be more fulfilled simultaneously. And it's the simultaneity, which is the key thing. And the reason I like that purpose and it's been enduring is because it does chime with the success and significance. But also it's, I'm not so clever, but it's useful in that it's a way of being rather than, you know, let's just say you talked about your purpose being something relating to the climate. That's brilliant. I mean, it's extremely noble, but it doesn't necessarily allow you to permeate your purpose through into, you know, literally every meeting, every exchange, every conversation, every email. Mm. Whereas always being on the hunt for how you can help somebody to improve their performance and fulfillment simultaneously by doing more of what they're really good at, literally you can flow into almost any context.
Yeah, and every area of your life.
Yeah, so and it becomes self-reinforcing. And so, you know, as particularly as my kids get older, it helps me to, I think, ask the right questions, the right coaching questions for them to figure things out themselves and, you know, enjoy parenting more and more. It gets more complicated as they get older, teens and late teens. But, you know, that thought is present in my mind. How can I help them to be more successful and more fulfilled simultaneously? So it almost becomes a sort of a way of being. It sounds a bit sort of maybe airy-fairy or zen, but, you know, actually in the first couple of years of thinking that was my purpose, I was quite ashamed, not ashamed, but, you know, felt quite awkward talking about it. But over time, I've become more at peace with it. And I can't imagine it will ever change very much, because I think it's fundamentally true that we do think that we have to make sacrifices to be happy. And so, you know, give up happiness to be successful. And wouldn't it be great if you didn't have to do that?
Yeah, and I'm actually sat here trying not to cry, actually, to be honest, Mark, because that was the whole reason why I wrote The Whole Marketeer, because I'd seen so many people that felt they do have to compromise between success and fulfillment. And you can have both as long as you're taking the reins and making the choices and have that clarity about who you are and what you want and how you're going to get it. You know, those two things can come in, as you say, equal measures, so that, you know, our souls do feel full and we are living our best lives and we are giving back, or whatever it is that is our purpose. And as you say, you know, talking about that person with climate change being their purpose, you know, yeah, it feels like an area of passion, but, you know, my purpose is to help others to grow. And as you say, I can do that in any walk of life, whether I'm, as you say, doing it as a parent, whether I'm doing it as a friend, a daughter, you know, a mother, a wife, as well as a marketeer and a coach and everything else that we do professionally. So, yeah, having a sense of being, or a way in which principles of life that we live, definitely, or actually at the core of fulfillment.
Couldn't agree more.
So on that note, I've taken so much out of today, and I'm so glad to have had you on the podcast and to be so aligned on, you know, our whys, if you will. But what one piece of advice would you give for marketeers of tomorrow?
I'm very fortunate in that I get to interview some amazing people through the video show that I do, The Places You'll Go with Richie Meta on a Friday morning. And actually, I've just interviewed David Smith, amazing person, gold Paralympian. I had a lot of hardship, a lot of struggle, incredibly uplifting guy. And he reminded me of a story that really had an impact on me a while ago. He talked about being in the present. So the story is, there's a chap called Johnny Wilkinson who won the 2003 Rugby World Cup with England. Again, you know, rugby, big part of my life. He had achieved his boyhood dream. And when asked, what did he feel in that moment of winning the Rugby World Cup? He said, nothing. I felt empty. And for all his success, he'd never actually managed to figure out a way to be in the present and to enjoy it. And I think he obviously subsequently suffered some quite significant mental health issues, recovered from those, and then did the very tail end of his career learn how to enjoy it in the moment. And that was very much David Smith's message, to live in the present and be grateful for what is in front of you. And so I think that's probably my main message, that through the ups and downs and the undulations, life's rich journey, need to find a way to enjoy it. And I had my sharp relief moment on this actually back in 2016, when I was, for the first time, I was running this thing called the Sprintathon, which is the charity event I founded. And I think I was probably more stressed than I'd ever been or certainly for a long time. Would this thing work? Reputation on the line? Is it actually going to raise any money? Are people going to enjoy it? Mechanically, does this thing of 422 people sprinting 100 meters to break a marathon world record actually work? And actually at this time, my daughter would have been, she would have been 13, 14. And at about midday, about an hour out from the start, she grabbed me by the shoulders and said, Dad, make sure you enjoy it. And I can honestly say that if she hadn't said that, I wouldn't have done. I would have been relieved, probably grateful. Yeah, probably just relieved. And then I was already thinking about, you know, what's next? Could we make this bigger? Could we scale it? As opposed to, you know, actually enjoying the moment. I think some people, when they're, you know, getting married, they say, let's meet at 8:30 over there, just so we could sort of take a reflection point and, you know, actually savor the moment. So I think it's sort of in that space. My main advice would be to be present and to enjoy it.
That's such a great piece of advice. And thank you so much for your time today.
Yeah, no, my pleasure. My pleasure, Abby. And I've enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to The Whole Marketeer podcast. If you've enjoyed today's episode, please do click follow below for more weekly podcasts. The Whole Marketeer book is now available in all good bookstores. For more information and support on how to have a successful and fulfilling career in marketing, go to www.thewholemarketer.com.